This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
It's Overdrive for your Thursday on TSN 1050 and streaming on the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Follow me on Twitter at Scotty Mac Thinks. Dave Poulin. Follow him at DJ Poulin 20 on Twitter.
So if you're in for Brian Hayes, am I trying to fill two roles here?
Well, I don't know, because it's the summer hiatus, right? So
yeah, so I'd actually be trying to fill two different roles in Jamie McLennan and...
Yeah, because O-Dog and Noodles have been away for a month, and they'll be back in about a month from now.
It's a big responsibility, though, having two guys.
Well.
Jobs.
You know, it's the middle of summer, Pooley, and you're the content generator here. So I'm just going to put my feet up.
Content generator. I like it.
I'm just going to put my feet up, and you can drive the bus, and we'll just talk about whatever the hell you want to talk about over the next 3 hours. How does that sound?
I was talking to Mike Lane, one of the TV producers, and I did a piece... I'm losing track of my days. 2 days ago, I did a piece on Draisaitl and Tavares and Duchesne.
Yes.
6 radio stations called from around the country.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Well, wait, all TSN affiliates?
Yes.
So
could you come on? So just flip, you know, everyone called, and just including a couple of our own guys on
no
different
doubt.
Hours, and said, oh, it's a great piece. Could you come on and talk about it and expand on it more? Because they were just starved for hockey, anything, right?
Right.
Quite comical, actually.
Well, and the flood is going to begin here definitely the day after Labor Day, when everything resets, right? The summer holidays are over, the kids are back in school.
Yeah, there's a minor reset on August 1st. You know, it's funny because people don't think at some point you have to carve out some time off in this occupation. And I remember having a long, candid conversation with Bobby Clark. So he went from being a player to being the general manager in a day. And back then, general managers took off most of July and August. Like, just took it off. Didn't call each other. Didn't answer each other's calls if they did call.
And, of course, back then, you didn't have a phone in your pocket.
You didn't have
right?
critical
it
days.
It was a landline.
You were never bothered. And he marveled at when that started to change. You know, when calls would come a little bit earlier or a little bit later after July 1st, you'd say, who works after the draft? Like, but you still have to carve some time out. And generally, that is the last 2 weeks in August. And it used to be the first week in July, or last 2 weeks in July, rather. It used to be the first week in August. But even now, they've built that USA little tournament. It used to be in Lake Placid just with the American kids. Then they invited the Finnish team and the Swedish team over. Just skeleton crews. Now it's a full-blown tournament
right.
that precedes the Ivan Hlinka. Now, the Hlinka is a must, okay? It starts on the 7th, and it runs for 10 days. So now, if you went back-to-back to those, now it's the middle of August. And the Hlinka is the U18s.
Yes.
It is next year's draft. And it is absolutely perfect because you get to see the best against the best, and then you get to project ahead through the year and into the U18 World Championships in the spring. So it's a perfect measuring stick. So once the second week in August rolled around, I love going to that tournament. But essentially, you do get a little bit of time when it comes back, but summer's over.
Right. Well, and then you've also got to reset a little bit, right? Because you'd have jet lag for probably 2 or 3 days.
And it's a great tournament. It is the only time you see the U18 Canadian team fully together. Because they're not all available in March because some of them are still in playoffs in the CHL. So it's a really fun tournament, a great venue, beautiful, beautiful place in the Czech Republic. Slovakia, actually, that part. But you go to both the Czech and Slovakia.
Well, the last conversation I had with Craig Button before summer holidays, so this would have been right at the end of June before July 1st, he said, so what are you doing in the summer? And we were just talking, and I said, I mean, the big trip for me, you know me, I'm a huge baseball nerd, right? So a couple of weeks from now, the Cubs will play the Blue Jays at
sort of a big series.
Wrigley Field. It's not going to be as big a series as it could have been otherwise because the Jays aren't holding up their end of the bargain.
But how many Canadians, how many Jays fans are going to be there?
I can't even predict, because I get people on Twitter telling me that they're going, and I just, Jays fans will be there. But I'll lay it out.
Groups of buddies going.
I'll lay it out for you. So about a year and a half ago, my grandfather, my mom's dad, passed away, and he left a little bit of money for my parents, and they decided that one of the ways they wanted to spend part of that was to do something that he would love for us to do. And we always reflect on a family trip that we took with my mom's parents in 1996, which was a baseball tour. And of course, one of the stops with me is Wrigley Field. We actually did both Chicago teams. We did Milwaukee when they were in the American League playing at County Stadium, and we saw the Blue Jays play there, the Eric Hansons and Charlie O'Briens of the world, that era. So we're doing a big family trip to Wrigley, and we're telling people about it, and all of a sudden, my aunt and uncle have tickets to the Friday game. So this is my dad's sister and her husband. My cousin, who is that aunt and uncle's son, is going to be in Chicago on business in the middle of that week, and he's coming to the Friday game. We've got second cousins who live just north of Chicago who now know that we're all coming to town. So this went from a little MacArthur deal to now extended family and extended family, and there's probably going to be some big thing in Chicago on Saturday.
What a great reason to do it, though. That's just the background of that story is terrific.
Right.
Really terrific. But I've got a couple of groups of friends going, and, you know, I love Wrigley Field. I actually went there a lot in my life because my proximity to Notre Dame and my baseball coach, Paul Maneri, who's at LSU now, was best friends with Jim Hendry.
Right, who is now a buddy of yours.
Yeah, so we went all the time. We went on the field. And when the White Sox first started playing the Cubs, think of that series. Friday afternoon, standing on the field, watching Frank Thomas in his White Sox uniform. It was really, really fun. So what tremendous energy. And through the good teams in the late 90s.
With the Cubs?
With the Cubs.
Yeah, because the 98 team was a wild card team.
Right, so the real good teams.
And the Sosa years and all of that. Of course, the Sosa years when he was hitting all the home runs alongside Mark McGwire and eventually Barry Bonds. I told you I caught a foul ball in the first inning of my first ever game at Wrigley Field.
You thought it was meant to be.
Well, it was.
You didn't even think it was coming off the bat. You thought it was coming straight from heaven.
Well, it was essentially. But here's the thing, Pooley. I was 14 years old. So this was the first time. We always did baseball trips, okay? And usually we would follow the Blue Jays around. Now, there was a bit of a negotiation in our family because I'm a bit of a beach bum, so I like kicking back for two
or
3 days.
Oak Street Beach in Chicago.
So I like kicking back for 2 or 3 days. So, but my dad's the type who gets bored easily, so the notion of lying on a beach all day would drive him nuts. So we would circle through, and we'd do Atlanta Braves, and then we ended up in Hilton Head one summer, or we did Virginia Beach one summer, but we tied in driving down. We saw the Pittsburgh Pirates at Three Rivers and coming back. I've got this all out of order, and I'm sure I'm going to get a text here soon. But we went to Veterans Stadium and saw the Phillies. There were a couple of trips to Boston and Yankee Stadium and whatnot thrown in there. So we would always mix kind of baseball and leisure in terms
life.
Of, life, beach stuff. So in 1993, I'm 14, and I mean, we would have gone to Wrigley at some point anyway. It just helped that I was a Cubs fan, right? So this is, and I'll tell you,
I remember the first time I walked into Wrigley like it was yesterday.
The first time I ever walked into that stadium, and you step through the concourse, which in and of itself is not particularly impressive because it's an older stadium, but you step out and you see the ivy and the grass and that old style baseball stadium for the first time. I get chills talking
about it. Friday afternoon.
So it's the bottom of the first inning. And this is August the 31st, 1993. I'm 14 years old. The Phillies are in town. So this is the Phillies team that the Blue Jays would play in the World Series a couple of months later. Mark Grace is up to bat in the bottom of the first. And we are a little to the left field side of the Cubs' third base dugout, about halfway up in the field level. So Grace, a left-handed batter.
Lefty, yep, first baseman.
Ben Rivera is pitching for Philadelphia, and Grace whacks one, and he's late on it. So it zips. It's a line drive that zips, I would say, into the second or third row. But because it was hit so hard, a fan reached up, and it skimmed off his hand. And my 10-year-old brother has his head buried in his coloring book, sitting beside me. And I swear to you, Pooley, that thing, I can't explain it to this day, but that baseball skimmed off that guy's hand, kicked back, and I threw out my hand, and it landed right in the palm, and it didn't hurt one bit.
And you weren't saving your brother's life. You were getting a baseball.
And I caught it. Yeah, and sometimes I'll still tease my brother here 20-odd years later. Just remember, you're alive because of me. But I caught it. There was zero pain, and I was nerded out. I was in my Ryan Sandberg jersey. I probably had Cubs shorts
That'd
on.
Number 23.
I certainly had my Cubs hat on. And for the rest of the game, because that happened in the first inning, I'm a kid, right? For the rest of the game, people coming up the stairs to go to the bathroom or to get beers or hot dogs or
great
whatever,
catch.
High-fiving the whole time, great catch. And I'd been a Cubs fan for a number of years at that point, but that really cemented it. And then on and on we'd go through the years, awesome. Culminating in the World Series last year. And I would make a point through my college years and young adult years of taking different friends to Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it was a big venue for Notre Dame kids to go over because it was only an hour and a half away. But the first time I went, I was with the Flyers, and I called somebody in Philly and said, hey, is there a connection to the Cubs? Ned Colletti.
Yes.
Ned Colletti had been a beat writer in Philadelphia covering the
And wasn't
Flyers.
His uncle, was it his uncle who was at the playoff game last year?
I'm not sure, but Ned, who's a big hockey guy, was the PR director for the Cubs at the time.
Right.
So, unfortunately, he put us like three rows behind home plate. We wanted to sit in the bleachers, right? We were like Friday afternoon walking into Wrigley Field, sitting three rows behind home plate on a beautiful sunny day, like it was yesterday.
You can still picture it. You can still smell the baseball smells. And Ned Colletti, of course, would go on to be the assistant GM in San Francisco and the general manager of the LA Dodgers.
Still a VP with the Dodgers with Alex out there.
But I think the story with Ned was, of course, the last time the World Series was played in Chicago was 19... I should know this. I'm embarrassing myself now. But this was the Billy Goat Curse.
Billy Goat Curse.
It was the late 40s or something like that, right? Was it 1948? Something like that. And how old is Ned? Because I'm trying to think if this story involves him. The story
would be... No, it wouldn't involve him in 48.
Okay, because the story was... It must have been that his uncle was a child at that point and couldn't go to the game for some reason, and his dad or somebody had said, don't worry, the next time the Cubs are in the World Series, we'll get you to a game. And of course, it never happened. Never happened until last year. And here he is now, an old man. And it bore out, truthfully. The Crazy. Next time the Cubs made the World Series, Ned's uncle, I think it was his uncle, was at the game.
That's great.
Really cool stuff. So, there you have it. I can't wait for it. It's like 2 weeks away now.
The way the Blue Jays travel, though, well. I mean, look at when you go to Fenway now, and the number of Blue Jay fans in Fenway is astonishing.
But it's everywhere, Dave.
It's a weekend road trip.
I'm telling you, and I've said this on the air before, and I'll repeat it here just in case you're listening and you haven't heard me. What you see on TV when the Blue Jays go to Seattle doesn't even do it justice. It is a scene. Man, batting practice, and of course the big thing is with batting practice is the visiting team hits last.
Right.
And so the gates open 90 minutes to 2 hours before the game, depending on team policy. And so you have the opportunity to watch the visiting team hit in full. And so we're working
and
in the meeting.
You can wander down.
So we're standing in the dugout or we're along the warning track in front of the dugout. And the Jays are taking BP, and all of a sudden you can tell when the gates open. It's like they just flood in. And Blue Jays blue taking up almost the entirety of the lower bowl around the infield.
It'll be intriguing in Chicago, though, because there's, you would argue, particularly with that point, and the Cubs are red hot right now, but there'll be less people willing to give up seats. But the premium of price and a multi-game series, it'll be fascinating to watch.
Yeah,
there's going to be a... It is the first time for the Jays, correct?
First time at Wrigley since 05.
Okay.
So ever.
Ever, yeah.
Yeah, they had a three-game series there back in 2005. But I did notice when I went on the Cubs website, when we initially looked at buying tickets, the Cubs have made that at least the Saturday game one of their premium games.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't think the Toronto Blue Jays would be a premium opponent.
Total sense.
But it's a summer weekend.
That'll be great.
And the Cubs aren't dumb. They know that the Blue Jays travel well. So I don't know what it cost us to get you in here today and tomorrow, Dave, but but I can't imagine...
That's a premium price as well.
I can't imagine...
That's one of the premium prices.
Can't imagine it was as expensive as it was for a Paris Saint-Germain to secure the services of Neymar. This is incredible stuff.
Is.
And the deal is now done, by the way, such that Barcelona, his previous team, and of course...
And they've accepted their mild transfer fee of...
222 million euros.
Euros.
Which is $262 million U.S.
Nice. So you follow soccer more than I do.
I'm on the periphery. Don't.
Okay, would that league that team plays in, Paris Saint-Germain, would that be the fourth or fifth best team in the Premier League hierarchy? Ooh.
You mean if they happen to play...
Yeah, like if I'm just looking at the leagues, you know, the English Premier League, this.
Well, I had Christian Jack.
You've got the Bundesliga, probably fourth or fifth in terms of.
I think we had Christian Jack on the program last week when this was all starting to circulate, and he said fifth best.
Okay.
Right? Premiership, okay. Spanish League, Bundesliga, and somebody bail me out here now. What's the other one? The German league, the Spanish, Italian, the Serie A.
Right.
Thank you. I mean, I should know that. So it would essentially be the fifth.
But not for long if they keep buying players.
Well,
like this.
And this is it. But and it's funny, Paris Saint-Germain is owned by a Qatari group that is tight with Qatar's ruling family. So it is essentially now owned by the Qatari government. And so it's got more money than it could ever spend.
So, of all the cities you're choosing to go to play soccer,
but the fascinating, and we've heard so much about rumors about China being willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to secure top players coming over for this attempted an upstart league that they have, Dave. I mean, Neymar's 25 years old. This guy has scored more than 100 goals playing for Barca.
You don't get a premier player at that age.
This is not a guy.
It's not David Beckham coming to the LA.
It's not, you know, Steinschweiger. It's not.
No.
It's not grade A talent at the end of their careers coming over, as you said, to North America. This guy is right in his prime. This guy is walking away from Barca, which is one of the most famous teams in the world, having played with Lionel Messi. He's scored more than 100 goals in competition at age 25. He's got a Champions League title to his credit.
So what's the step out for him?
The money. So the interesting thing is now, in this day and age, I say this just off of what I'm reading and with no hint of judgment. I mean, if you look at his career accomplishments, there's already a lot there. Now it's the payday. This guy is going to clear, according to everything I've read, after tax, he's going to clear more than 500,000 euros per week over the life of the five-year deal with PSG. What would you do, and what does that translate to? Is that... $600-700 million U.S. dollars per
week. Soccer season goes the whole year.
100,000,
essentially.
Yeah, $600-700,000 U.S. dollars per week after tax. So you're walking home, Dave, with about close to $3 million U.S. dollars a month for 5 years. I can tell you this right now.
And you're spacing that over 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah. So 12 times, over 60 months.
In the Steph Curry $40 million a year range.
Right. I can tell you this right now. If I had that kind of money, there is an uninhabited island somewhere on this planet.
You better produce, my friend. You better produce, my friend.
The money's guaranteed, Dave. The old thing would be, 5 years from now, nobody would ever see me again.
He will produce.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And the transfer fees are staggering.
Well, and this dwarfs the last highest transfer fee, which I think was doled out about a year ago, involving, I want to say, Manchester United. I mean,
Transfer fees exist amongst the hockey organizations over there as well.
Right. Just a way of doing business.
Exactly. You're buying a player from a different country.
Right.
And that's the way it always worked over there. Fascinating.
The man is rich. Ryan Tannehill, we have an update on his status. So here's the deal. He had a bit of an ACL, MCL thing in his left knee, suffered last year with the Dolphins. He had appeared to injure his knee this morning as Miami's training camp continues. We now have an update. The MRI results are in. And why are we so concerned with Ryan Tannehill?
Well, who's going in there if Ryan Tannehill's out?
If Ryan Tannehill is out long-term, this is another potential landing spot for Colin Kaepernick. Alex Marvez was on TSN 1050 with Andy McNamara earlier on today and suggested even a Jay Cutler
out of the booth
might get consideration because Adam Gase.
The coaching link, sure.
The head coach of the Miami Dolphins is the ex-offensive coordinator in Chicago.
And arguably when Jay Cutler played his best.
Right. So we'll update you on Ryan Tannehill's status on the other side. We got a
Kaepernick
bunch of other.
Will get a job.
Okay. Well, see, I want your thoughts on this. Yeah. I want your thoughts on this because it's dragging on unbelievably long. And some other stuff to get to as well. Mike Fisher has hung him up. Don Maloney is now in the Calgary Flames front office. Craig Button will join us at 6 o'clock. Bob Elliott of the Canadian Baseball Network at 5 o'clock. And at 4:30, which is what, 8 minutes from now, Lori Ewing, who is the Canadian press reporter covering the World Track and Field Championships in London, England. Andre DeGrasse is injured. Mm-hmm. And will not compete in what everybody believes is Usain Bolt's final 100-meter race.
Too bad. That would have been fun.
Yeah, and especially after the comments that Bolt had about DeGrasse earlier on this week. So that's all to come. Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Dave Poulin. Stay with us. TSN 1050 and streaming on the TSN Go app. Hey, Zodog and Noodles are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament. Saturday, September 23rd at Woodbine Racetrack. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. And for every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds go to the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. This is Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Dave Poulin. Coming up next, Lori Ewing, Canadian press reporter in London, covering the World Track and Field Championships. Usain Bolt is unhappy with the, quote, disrespect Andre DeGrasse showed him, but they won't be racing against each other this weekend in what might be Bolt's final 100-meter race, and that's because DeGrasse has pulled a hamstring and is done for the season. Lori will join us to talk about all of that next. Stay with us. Overdrive, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. All right, Bob Elliott of the Canadian Baseball Network at 5 o'clock. Talk a little baseball. Craig Button at 6 o'clock, TSN's resident scout. He's at the World Junior Showcase and gearing up for the Hlinka tournament over in Europe. But right now we will head over to Europe, to London, England, where we're joined by Canadian press reporter covering the World Track and Field Championships. She is Lori Ewing. Andre DeGrasse out of this weekend's 100-meter final, and would have been the last time to see DeGrasse and Usain Bolt go up against each other. Alas, it's not going to happen. Lori, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Hi, good. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on. So I suppose there's some disappointment that we're not going to see Andre DeGrasse take on Usain Bolt this weekend. It would have been one last opportunity to see the greatest Bolt get challenged by DeGrasse.
Yeah, it's a huge blow. I know I was, I actually just landed at Heathrow last night at about 11 o'clock and checked my phone and somebody had mentioned it and I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a huge, like a joke or something. But then, yeah, super disappointing. Not just the fact that we've all been waiting for, since the Rio Olympics, I think all of us have been waiting to see the two of them race again, but also, just the medals, the medal potential that's now lost for Canada. Andre accounted for 3 of Canada's 6 medals at the Olympics last summer. So, yeah, it's a huge disappointment.
How would you, because Usain Bolt brought it up again, that the quote-unquote disrespect that Andre DeGrasse has shown him. How would you characterize the relationship between these two right now?
It's hard to say. I know on Andre's side, like I think he has the most respect for Usain. I think that whole issue with the 200 last year when he pushed Usain in the 200 semifinals, that was a tactical decision with between Andre and his coach to try to tire Usain out a little bit. And I think that maybe Usain just didn't like that. So I think maybe he kind of read it wrong, but I know like Andre has nothing but respect for Usain.
Laura, other than time that has passed since Rio, is there any indication that would have brought DeGrasse closer, other than the fact that it's a year later and Usain Bolt is a year older?
Yeah, well, the thing is that Usain's only had 3 races this year. I know he lost like a really close friend a couple of months ago, so he hasn't been racing that much. And Andre has been racing really well. He had the big 969. Obviously, it was wind aided. But there's this technical calculation that if you like you take into account the wind, it would have been a Canadian record. So like he's shown that he was on pace for a really, really fast race in London. So and plus both of them are like big game competitors. You know, you can't really like they're obviously not at their best when the lights are brightest.
With Laura Ewing of the Canadian Press covering the World Track and Field Championships in London, and due to Andre DeGrasse's hamstring injury, we've been robbed, and he's been robbed in particular of the opportunity to go up against Usain Bolt one more time. So what becomes the story now, Laurie? Because I imagine that DeGrasse versus Bolt would have been it. It's also Usain's final 100-meter race, as far as we know. Does that become the entire focal point here?
I guess from an international audience, yes. The other thing about Andre is you're missing now the 200. Bolt's not running the 200s, and Andre had a legit shot at winning that race. And then you also take the men's 4x1 relay, so... Like the Canadians won bronze last year with Andre running anchor, and you take him out of the mix. And I think it's like his coach Stu McMillan said today, it's kind of taking Donovan or Bruni out of the 4x1 in Atlanta. You know, so I guess now the Damian Warner has a really good shot at gold in the decathlon. Obviously, there's Derek Drouin in the high jump. He was Olympic and world champion, but he's been dealing with some injury issues. There's a couple of race walkers who could reach the podium. Sean Barber in pole vault. He's the reigning world champion, but he's also not having a terrific season. So, yeah, internationally, I guess all eyes are on Bolt.
What do we understand about the timeline for DeGrasse's recovery?
They said 5 to 6 weeks, which I guess is pretty normal. But the thing about that is it knocks him out for the rest of the season, so... He also won't be able to run in the Diamond League final, and he was number one ranked in the 100 and the 200 going into that. So, and that was also $50,000 on the line for both of those races. So he gives up that. But the good thing is that he didn't damage it further. Like if they had decided to let him run or whatever, he could have obviously done a lot more damage than he did. So, seems like he'll be back. I'm sure he'll be back as good as ever next year.
All right, Laurie, thanks so much for taking some time. We'll certainly be reading with interest and watching with interest. Appreciate it.
Great, thanks.
Lori Ewing of the Canadian Press at the World Track and Field Championships in London.
Has to be the most feared injury for a sprinter, obviously.
Well, anything in your legs, right?
Well, the hammy itself.
Though, hammy, quads, calves.
Yeah, the explosion is the hamstring for him, though.
That's right.
The, you know, and to build up for that event, I mean, that in a non-Olympic year, to miss the biggest event of the year.
Well, it's also, as Lori detailed, it's the one opportunity at the follow-up with Usain Bolt.
Right.
And, you know,
and that was so much fun to watch.
Oh, it was brilliant. But I'm
so good.
And I'm one of those guys, too, Dave, who is immediately cynical when I hear something like that. And I'm thinking to myself, you combine, and obviously Andre DeGrasse is hurt. That's not an issue here. But the first thing I think is, well, you combine what Usain Bolt said about DeGrasse earlier this week, going back to the he disrespected me stuff. I'm like, was a guy like Bolt kind of pushing DeGrasse out of this race?
No, I think he needed to get himself in final tune shape. Probably that's probably been his goal, right? In order to train at that age. We're going to talk about age and players and Tom Brady's of the world. To do what he does at his age and continue to pace, you have to incentivize yourself somehow. And so that had been the closest to him in recent time. And that's what was going to be his final push, right?
Right.
He needed a final push to take him through that final race.
Can you imagine if they had raced and DeGrasse had beaten him? Could you just imagine? I'll tell you this right now. It would be the front page of every newspaper in this country. And there would be focus on track and field on this radio station and elsewhere, I'm sure.
And that's why,
unlike what we're accustomed to.
The question about whether we had any barometer as to whether,
right,
you know, over the course of the last year, were there any indicators that said, oh, here's the ascent of DeGrasse and here's the descent of Usain Bolt? And it was hard to say. She said there was some personal stuff on his side that had probably not enabled him to run as much as he would have.
Yeah. Usain Bolt turns 31 on the 21st of this month.
The little lower expiration date for world-class sprinters, I think, wouldn't you say?
Well, what's happening to our lives, Pooley, when we start referring to 30, 31-year-olds as old?
But it used to be old in every sport.
And what does that make us?
You go through ebbs and flows in this.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's us. You're qualifying me in your age group. I'm very impressed.
Well, hey, I mean, at this point, it's over. And I bring that up because Tom Brady's 40 years old.
I loved saying when I was one of the older guys in the league, I'd love getting a young guy and saying, he's about our age. They'd look across you and say, our age?
Yeah.
Don't be including me in your age.
Well, it's
about our age.
Isn't it amazing in life how what you perceive to be as old changes so quickly? So you're 18, 19, 20, and you can't even fathom what it must be like to be 30. Right? And some 30-year-old will tell you, oh, you'll find out when you get here. Your metabolism just slows right down. You can't crush a pizza and then get away with it like you can at 18 or 19.
Usually you think now you're of the age of when you really remember your friend's parents.
Right.
You think, well, they were old.
Well, this,
that doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, I'm 38. I remember my dad's 40th surprise birthday party.
And they were old.
Like it was yesterday. Like it was yesterday. I could tell you where we were. I could tell you.
Well, your detailed description of your 93 family trip.
Yeah, I couldn't. I can't tell you what he said when he opened the door and we all yelled surprise, because that would get me fired.
He doesn't like surprise parties.
He wasn't expecting it. He used some words to describe the people in the room that I can't repeat on terrestrial radio. But I remember it all like it was yesterday. So now you get to 30 and you're like, oh,
it's
my.
It's all relevant, Scotty, seriously.
Oh, my God. If I go back to when I was 20, well, if you fast forward the same amount of time, then I'll be 40. Then you're near 40 and you're like, wow, I'm middle-aged and the gray hairs are coming in. You just accept it, though.
Not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
It's all in your mind.
It's what I'm telling myself, Pooley.
It's all in your mind.
I'm on the fast track to 40.
Never mind.
No.
Look at my hockey card.
None of my business. You've got a Wikipedia page. I'll pull it up here and
look at my hockey card. None of my own numbers ever fazed me in the least. When I played, never. But my daughters, my two oldest daughters, my identical twins turned a certain age recently. I was like, really?
Well, see, now I have to guess what that age is. 30?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. And that's That to me is the real shocker.
Yeah, it's not I'm old. No. It's that I have kids who are 30.
Yes.
That's the real
sort of... That's the amazing number. That's just, you're just like, how did that happen?
Yeah. And where did the time go? We'll talk more about Tom Brady's 40th, and we'll get to some of our Twitter responses. I'm asking you, because I have a friend who's turning 40 years old in 2019. Actually, I can't even pretend anymore. I'm turning 40.
But we have to get to the wording of that Twitter account.
Yes.
There, because that was the brilliant part.
What is the best part of turning 40 and the worst part of turning 40? We asked that on Twitter a couple of hours ago. Hit me up at Scotty Mac. Thanks. Dave is at DJ Poulin 20. The station is at TSN 1050 Radio. We'll get to some of the responses. You can join in the conversation. Bob Elliott of the Canadian Baseball Network at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. And TSN 1050's Sound Wars, the next installment, is next. Stay with us. Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app.
It's time for a TSN 1050 Sound War.
Whoa, what a hit that was!
This is the worst one for sure.
Right, it's 4:49, and you're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, so it's Sound Wars time. First, the winner from today's Sound Wars battle between I Have to Crap and Jackisms is...
I wrote on a piece of paper, I have to crap, and it was right in front of Jerry Bettman.
It was a foot away from his grill.
And if it's O-Dog, I'm guessing that he didn't write I have to crap. There was probably another word there. But no, it is the winner.
He would have used that word. That would have been a politically correct word for him.
You think he would have written that down on the piece of paper, though? Mm-hmm. He would have used that word to describe the gastrointestinal requirement that was emerging. Okay. Well,
I put a lot of thought into that evaluation.
No.
But.
No. Well, we're kind of talking off the top of our head here. So it wins 70% to 30% over Jackisms. And so we move on. The best sound bites, once again, go head-to-head. And this gives you the opportunity to decide which one survives this TSN 1050 Sound War. It's brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. This is soundbite seed number 4 versus seed number 13 on your bracket. Soundbite number 4, Dennis Eckersley reacting to a questionable call by that night's home plate umpire.
And he's going to get hit. And they're going to throw Gausman out of the game.
It's a curveball.
He has been thrown out.
I mean, you can't be that clueless. I mean, he threw a breaking ball into Bogart's back. I mean, everybody that watches, you know, anybody that knows baseball, that he's not trying to throw at him. That's ridiculous. I mean, have an idea.
That was probably about the easiest night of Dennis Eckersley's season so far. And that was back when Boston and Baltimore were having all those issues earlier on in the year. So it's between that and this, which is soundbite number 13 on your bracket. The legendary voice of the Maple Leafs, Joe Bowen, dubbing William Nylander with a legendary nickname.
Nylander scores! Nylander! Wee Willie Nylander ties the game!
Right, so there you have it. It's Bonesy versus Eckersley. Go to tsn1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite soundbite. Seed number 4, Have an Idea. Or seed number 13, Wee Willie Nylander. Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Naylor and Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle on TSN 1050. Sound Wars is brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager at select Loblaws grocery stores.
With our last matchup, I did have some time to spend with Jack Armstrong on a golf course recently.
Okay.
Very enjoyable. Because our paths don't cross here during the
Bacotti!
Year.
Bacotti!
You know, you assume that everybody knows everybody.
Yes.
But you don't. And so a friend at my course is good friends with Jack, and we played about a week and a half ago. A little bit weather influenced, but very, very enjoyable.
And well,
very enjoyable.
And
day.
You know, if you would know from talking, huge hockey fan.
Yeah, he is. No,
Sabres
no question.
Season's ticket holder. Bills season's ticket holder.
We actually had a lot of history too, and a lot of guys that we knew from the era that he coached was the era that I was at Notre Dame. So a lot of the same names, and he actually worked the Notre Dame summer camp when he was a young guy.
Did you cross paths?
At Fordham. He was a young assistant coach at Fordham. Never, I mean, we were in the same place at the same time, but of course we had no reason to know each other.
Right.
As a young coach, he had worked Digger Phelps's camps at Notre Dame when he was a young Fordham guy. So before he went to Niagara.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was interesting, but a really interesting day with him on the golf course. Some great stories and a very, very enjoyable guy.
No question. Small world, the way it works out sometimes as well. Hour number two of Overdrive is coming up. Scott MacArthur and Dave Poulin with you on your Thursday. Got a bunch of news and notes from the NHL that we'll touch on. The Jack Eichel negotiations going on in Buffalo. Mike Fisher calls it a career with the Nashville Predators. There's a new member of the Calgary Flames front office, so all of that is ahead. And up next, a Hall of Famer from the Canadian Baseball Network. That's his website. He runs it now. Bob Elliott to talk Blue Jays and whatever else is going on in Major League Baseball. Bobbo joins us next. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app.